I'd like to call to order this Policy and Strategy Committee meeting on Tuesday, November the 21st, 2023. Mayor Carolyn Bolivar-Gessen will be joining us via Teams. I'd like to acknowledge that we are within Mi'kma'ki, the traditional territory of the Mi'kmaq. We are able to work here today because of the Treaty of Peace and Friendship, which was signed by those who came before us. Before we approve the agenda, we will be electing a vice chair. And I want to turn the time over to April for that.
Okay, first on the thing would be the nominations for vice chair of the committee as the deputy mayor sits as the chair. So we will proceed with nominations.
We're going to wait for Councillor Bell to take his place so that he has the opportunity to vote for vice chair to the Policy and Strategy Committee.
Okay, nominations names are for Vice Chair of the Policy and Strategy Committee, Councillor Vino, Councillor DeLong, Councillor Haysom, Councillor Moore, Councillor Greek, this could take a long time. Councillor Statton, the names nominated again are Councillors Vino, DeLong, Haysom, Moore, Greek, and Statton.
Councillor Statton, would you like to have your name stand?
No, I would like to respectfully remove my name. Thank you.
Councillor Greek?
I would like to remove my name as well. Thank you, Chair.
Councillor DeLong?
She was nominated.
Would you like your name to stand? And Councillor Vino?
Please remove my name. Thank you.
Okay. And Councillor Haysom?
I think I will remove my name. Thank you so much.
And Councillor Moore?
Sure.
So on your first ballot for nominating of your vice chair for Policy and Strategy Committee, we have Councillors DeLong and Councillor Moore. Okay, so we have DeLong, Moore, Moore, DeLong.
And the race is on.
Moore. DeLong. DeLong. Moore. Moore. DeLong. This is it.
Wow.
Moore.
Oh.
On the first ballot, Councillor Moore. This is a new vice chair.
Thank you very much, Councillor Moore, for offering, and congratulations. I want to... we have a motion to destroy the ballots.
So moved.
Moved by Councillor Moore, accepted by Councillor Greek. All in favor? Motion has been approved. I just want to...
You have to ask them.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry, Mayor. Yes?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. Sorry about that. I just want to let you know, Councillor Moore, that I have a meeting I need to represent the mayor at, and I will be leaving here before the presentation so that we don't interrupt that presentation of Zen Energy, and you'll be taking over at that moment.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, do we have any announcements, acknowledgments, or recognitions this morning? Councillor Haysom.
Thank you so much. Just wanted to let everyone know, I'm sure it's no surprise, Christmas in Petite was a resounding success yet again, in spite of heavy rain and in spite of absolutely gorgeous weather on Sunday. Tons of people in the village of Petite and into West Dublin. It's always so wonderful to see how many talented and creative artisans there are in our community, and to see them all come together in one place, and to see the buzz and energy that takes place in the village of Petite Revere. So a big congratulations to all the organizers, and of course there's quite a big fundraising effort that's a part of that event. So it helps to feed some families who need a little extra support through the Christmas season as well. And just a big recognition for all the people who put in all the hard work.
Thank you very much, Councillor Haysom. It was indeed a very rainy day on Saturday when some of us went that day, and it was a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed that I went. Do we have anyone here for public input at this time? Oh, I'm sorry, what? I'm sorry, Mayor. I keep forgetting. Sorry. Go ahead.
I just want to echo as well that on Saturday, that whole community or communities were buzzing, and it was great to see the enthusiasm and the people out, even in the rain, supporting local community events. And there were several events throughout the municipality, but Christmas in Petite definitely was overflowing.
Indeed it was. And I'm just wondering, is there anybody here for public input? Are there any changes to the agenda? Can I have an approval of the agenda? Moved by Councillor Hubley and second by Councillor Haysom. And all in favor? The mayor?
Yes.
The agenda has been approved. We're going to move on to the approval of the minutes of October the 17th, 2023, as circulated. Do I have someone to approve the minutes? Approved by Councillor DeLong, seconded by Councillor Haysom. All those in favor? Mayor?
Yes.
The minutes have been approved. All right. Do we have no business arising from the minutes? presentation isn't until 10:15, so we're just going to continue moving on down. Abby, are you prepared to do your presentation on the old growth forests?
Yep, I am.
Okay, I'll turn the time over to you.
Sure. Good morning, everyone. Today I'm presenting on a request to send a letter to the Premier of Nova Scotia to protect the MODL's old growth forests. The recommendation from the staff to the PSC committee is to recommend Municipal Council to write a letter to the Premier of Nova Scotia requesting expedited identification of all the old growth forests on Crown land in MODL. A little bit of background where this is all coming from. So this recommendation is arising from George Brownie's presentation during the Municipal Council meeting that was held on July 25, 2023. Mr. Brownie highlighted key aspects concerning the Lunenburg County's old-growth forest and the environmental commitments that have been made by the Nova Scotia provincial government. In October of 2021, Nova Scotia government passed the Environmental Goals and Climate Change Reduction Act, which had a commitment made to conserve and protect at least 20% of the province land and water mass by the end of this decade, 2030.
We have a question by yep. Councillor DeLong.
Yep.
Thank you. Do you mind closing the laptop so I can see you? Thanks. I'm just curious, the nature of the proposed motion, it doesn't say anything about protection. Your background, you said that you're requesting protection for the old growth forests.
Yeah. So the identification of old growth forests would automatically mean the protection of them. So that is what I will be explaining after this paragraph.
Okay, thank you.
So the new policy that has come into effect last year in 2022, the old growth forest policy, it automatically protects the all the old-growth forests that have been identified or designated on the Crown land. It is protected from the harvesting and logging and other commercial activities. So the request or recommendation is to expedite the identification of all those old-growth forests on the Crown land. Does that answer the question? So it automatically will protect... moving on... As I was saying, Mr. Brownie highlighted how the old growth forests have declined significantly in the Lunenburg County area due to several reasons, including clear cutting practices, and also emphasized on the ecological importance of all the old growth forests, including the carbon sequestration and other ecological services that the forest provide us, including water purification and wildfire resilience. He presented the Save Our Old Growth Forest, that is a petition that is being sent to the Premier and requested Municipal Council to write a letter to pause all the harvesting and road building activities in all gold forests until the 20% of conservation of target is met. A little bit of quick background on what the province has done towards the old growth forest protection until now. It began back in 1999 when an interim old growth forest policy was enacted to conserve the old growth forests across all eco districts on Crown land in Nova Scotia. And the province further expanded its conservation efforts with the old forest policy in 2012. And since its implementation, the policy has helped to conserve thousands of hectares of old growth forest across the province Crown land. However, with the increasing pressures from private land development and the climate change, this policy wasn't enough to protect the old growth forest in the long run. And to respond, also based on the recommendation that was made by Dr. William Leahy, the province developed a new policy last year in August 2022, which is known as Old Growth Forest Policy for Nova Scotia. And this policy aims to further enhance the old growth forest protection on Crown land. And they further define the old growth forest, what those old growth forests actually mean. It means like at least 20% of the trees stand in an area should be at least 100 years or older. And the new policy also protects the designated old-growth forest areas from logging or commercial activities. And it estimates the policy will protect approximately 32,000 hectares of old-growth forests on the Crown land. So based on this, the staff recommends that Municipal Council supports the petition that is being made to the Premier, and further write a letter to the Nova Scotia Premier to expedite the identification of all growth forests on Crown land in MODL. For statistics, in MODL, approximately 19,170 hectares of Crown land exist, out of which so far only 645 hectares is currently protected under the new policy. This memorandum also includes a map that highlights the Crown land in MODL with green color. The province plans to continuously update this mapping to identify more old-growth forests for protection. But through this memo, the request is being made to expedite the identification of all those old-growth forests and Crown land.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions, Councillor Staton?
Just two questions for you. You said this is only Crown land. And how old does the forest have to be before it's considered old growth?
So to answer first, yes, only on Crown land. Second, for all forests to be considered old growth, typically they say at least 20% of the stand should be 100 years or older. So 20% of stand means, so they define it as minimum 1 hectare of a land is considered a forest. In a 1 hectare of land to be considered old-growth forest, 20% of the stand needs to be 100 years or older.
Councillor Haysom also has a question, as well as she'll be followed by the mayor.
Okay, sorry, there's so much activity in here. I think that in Mr. Briani's presentation, he also highlighted the fact that that age at which we're defining old-growth forest keeps shifting, and so now it's actually anything 80 years. It used to be 100 years, but it does seem as though it's shifting. I just wanted to say that I fully support this move. I know that we have recently had a presentation here at Council about some of the invasive species that are affecting trees in throughout Nova Scotia, specifically hemlock. And, of course, hemlock are some of the oldest trees that we have in this province as well. So I think anything we can do to protect and identify the existing stands would be extremely useful. And my only concern is that it has taken so long since the presentation for this to come back in front of council so that we can move on this quickly.
Go ahead, Mayor Bolivar-Getson.
I just want to comment on the map. I'm trying to understand exactly what we have here before us. So the green, is this identified as only Crown land, or is this identified as Crown land with old growth?
So this is identified only Crown land, and we don't know how much old growth forest is there on this Crown land. And that is where the request is being made, to identify all the old growth forest on those Crown lands to the Premier.
So I know we had a presentation on the hemlock here a while back, not that long ago, and in relation to the invasive species or that is currently in the hemlock, this could be a detriment if we are not able to cut the old growth, because it could come down to that. So would that still give government the ability to remove species that have invasive species in them that may cause it to spread further within the province or within our municipality?
So the new policy that has been adopted by the province last year clearly defines that sometimes there may be situations where the old growth forest itself may have to be removed, and they have provided certain circumstances, like examples of those circumstances. So this could be one, like if it has been attacked by invasive species, so maybe it could be considered for the removal to prevent the further spread of the disease to the other areas and whatnot. So there has been provisions in the policy. So even though an old growth forest is identified and designated and it is protected under the new policy, but there are instances where it can be assessed by the minister to if the removal is required. There are the provisions that is defined properly in the policy. For example, another example is twinning of highway or like road safety or people's safety. In those situations too, if the minister feels that we would have to remove the old growth forest, they can choose to do so. However, the policy also properly defines that any area of old growth forest, if it is removed, it has to be replaced by an equal number of old growth forest somewhere else. So it has to be protected. Either equal number of area of old growth forest has to be identified and protected or restored and protected under the new policy.
And I guess to the
Mayor, could you speak louder? We're not able to hear you clearly enough.
Oh, sorry. That's usually not a problem for me. Let me just see where this mic is. So when I look at the map, the majority of this land is lying north of the 103. And I know the area, and I'm just wondering what percentage of the land has already been cut. Do we know that?
No, we would not know what percentage of land has already been cut.
Okay, thank you.
Counselor, okay. Are you able to answer that question more, or there are other counselors who have questions?
Sure. Just to add, I think there is a map on the Mr. Brownie's presentation who had used GIS, ArcGIS mapping to show like how much the forest cover has been lost over the past two decades. Although the map itself is just an image, but I'm pretty sure like where the Mr. Brownie would have grabbed the map from, like the ArcGIS, we probably should be able to find out how much the forest has already been clear-cutted.
Does that answer your question for you, Your Honor?
Yes.
Okay. Thank
yes.
you. Councillor Moore has a question, then be followed by Councillor DeLong, and then Councillor Wynot.
My question is, it's maybe not quite a question, a concern, and I'm not speaking personally on sawmills. I'm speaking on sawmills all over, lumber mills all over Nova Scotia, not any specific one. So what does this mean for them economically? What would this mean for them? Maybe Carolyn knows more about this than I do, but...
Yeah. So given the new policy, which protects anyway, like the old growth forest on their crown land, this petition or this request to write a letter to expedite the identification of that old growth forest won't really go beyond the policy. So, for example, even if we were not to write this letter, would not mean that people can go and harvest the old growth forest. It would still be illegal to do that. So the only request that we are making is to expedite the identification of all that old growth forest. So, yeah, so there's nothing that we are doing that is beyond what the policy already covers, mm-hmm. if that answers your question.
Thank you.
Councillor DeLong, did you have a further question?
Yes, thank you. My question is, which definition of old growth forest does the province use, and what are we requesting the 80-year or the 100-year old growth forest?
I know like Mr. Brownie presented, when he presented in his petition, it said 80 years or older. However, the new policy that I have a copy of, it says 100 years. I don't know like if how recent it is that they may have updated, but it hasn't been made public yet if they have changed the definition. But so far, I think the definition that would be followed would be as prescribed in the new policy or described in the policy. It says 100 years or older.
Councillor Wynot, did you have a question?
Yes, for the those protection of the old forests themselves, is there any thought on installing dry hydrants, extra dry hydrants, and a fuel dump at the Queen's Airport for large aerial fire protection services? We have to go to Digby now to get air fuel for our planes, big planes, to help fight forest fires. So is there any thought on protecting the protection?
None at this time, but this is certainly in our radar as part of our There's also one action item of our local climate change action plan to assess our ability to manage wildfires and also to expand the installation of dry hydrants should we need to have adequate infrastructure in place to be better prepared should these events happen, extreme wildfires and such events happen. But not at this time. We haven't assessed how many dry hydrants or where would we need dry hydrants on because the to begin with, we haven't identified the old-growth forests themselves on the groundland, so we won't really know at this point, but certainly will be in our radar as we move along.
Councillor Bell, you have a question.
Thank you. I think that the identification of these forests or wooded areas are important because we had presentations on two occasions when environmentalists, land trust people, were here with us telling us about Cape Lehave Island and being the one of the best examples of old-growth forests on the East Coast. And there's not one single dot of green on that island. And I don't think you had to be too smart to go out there and look at some of the trees to realize they're twice as old as I am. So I think that this is an exercise that needs to be done. But is it a problem within the province itself and the people they have working for them to be able to agree on what is old growth and what is not? Like, how does mapping occur and we have wide areas like this left completely out?
So if it was... back in like maybe 3-4 years ago, there could be a situation where there were confusions in terms of defining old growth forests and having a criteria. But now that this new policy in place, it clearly defines what are the characteristics of the old growth forest, what species, and like pretty much very in detail. So now there shouldn't be any confusion on what is regarded as an old growth forest or not. So DNR are Department of Natural Resources and Renewable have a clear criteria or what could be designated as old-growth forest. So it's only a matter of mapping that out as swiftly as possible.
Do we have any other further questions or comments? Councillor Bell, would you be willing to bring forth a motion regarding... Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm finished. Yep.
Sure. Councillor Bell, would you be willing to bring forth the motion? Thank you.
To the Chair and members of the Policy and Strategy Committee, I move that the Policy and Strategy Committee recommend that Municipal Council write a letter to the Provincial Minister responsible for Natural Resources and Renewables, Tory Rustin, with copies to Premier Houston and local MLAs Becky Dorham and Susan Corkum Greek, requesting expedited identification of all old growth forests on Crown land in the municipality of the District of Lunenburg. I so move.
Seconded by Councillor Wynot. Discussion on the motion. Councillor Moore.
When looking at that map and noticing all the areas that are north of the 103 that I represent, Councillor Greek represents, and I'm not comfortable voting in favor of this motion today. I need to do a little bit more. I have more questions. And without those questions answered, I will have to vote no on this motion. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Councillor Statton.
Thank you. For clarification, can Councillor Moore maybe tell us what some of those questions would be so that if we're not aware of what the problem is, maybe we can, a little bit more information doesn't hurt anyone.
Certainly. Councillor Moore, would you be
I
willing?
I can. As in my comments before, it's not any specific lumber mill. It's lumber mills all over Nova Scotia. I would like to make sure that this does not impact any production that they need to keep their mills open. And yeah, it's in no way is a personal question. This is for lumber mills all over Nova Scotia.
100%. And I don't think it would impact in any way any of those commercial activities. So identifying old growth forest, even if, as I mentioned earlier too, like even if we don't go ahead and identify those old growth forests, sawmill persons are not really allowed to harvest them. It would be illegal under the new policy. So only thing we are trying to do is identify them and have them designated under the new policy. So it would automatically receive the protection status. But however, having said that, it would not impact any commercial activities at all. So if the forest is not old growth forest, even if it is on crown land, they can go and like harvest or use it for their commercial activities.
Supplementary? Certainly. Okay, can you go back a couple sentences? But you said once this policy is in place, some of these lands will become old growth that are being harvested now, correct?
So, yeah. No, the policy is already in place.
Okay.
Last year in August 2022, it was adopted. So if there is an old growth forest and if it is not being identified yet, in the sense like people, it has not been discovered yet, and it has, if it has already been cut off, nobody really would know if it has already been harvested. But the new policy protects that. So if they're using it for commercial activities, an old growth forest, it would be illegal under the new policy. It is already in place. What we are suggesting is to expedite the identification of all those old-growth forests on crown lands so that they automatically would be designated as under the new policy and it would automatically receive the protection status. Does that still create any confusion?
Yeah, it's still, yes, to a point. Thank you for your explanation. But in my head, I still am not comfortable, so I will be voting against it. Thank you.
I think Mayor Bolivar Getson has a question.
Yes, she does. Go ahead, Mayor.
Thank you. I was just trying. I thought you contradicted yourself, in that definition originally. So what we are saying is this motion will identify old growth forests in our municipality. Is that correct?
Yeah.
There is already a policy in place or legislature that would protect an old growth forest from being clear cut.
Yeah.
So currently, if it's not identified, it could be clear cut.
So it could be clear cut in the sense if, how would I say, like if nobody knows.
And not that I'm suggesting that, I'm just.
Yes.
But if it doesn't, so this would protect them from being. But I guess I'm looking at that Lake Pleasant area and some of those areas where typically are the harvesting areas in the province. And I know that government has contracts with different mills to provide so much fiber to them through Crown Lands. Would that mean the whole stand in that area that would surround that, or is it just the old growth portion?
So just the old growth portion. I think, yeah, maybe to clarify.
The boundary, I guess, around.
So if the province already has the contracts, that itself would mean they have already done the assessment of old growth forest. So that means it is not considered old growth forest. That is why they have contracts in place. That's the reason it won't be impacted. It won't impact them in any way.
So this definition of has come into place when?
Last year in August 2022.
Okay, because these contracts date back 50, I don't know how many years different ones have had. So that's why I'm just, it wouldn't be something new.
Yeah, it wouldn't be something new. And also it doesn't impact any private lands or private landowners. It only impacts the crown lands, this policy itself. And also only if there is an old-growth forest, specifically what is the concern under this policy. Beyond that, nothing really gets impacted with this request policy.
Do we know what the barrier is around an old-growth forest? Because we all know that if you clear-cut up to an area, the next thing to fall are the next line of trees in sight. So there would be a barrier around, I would think, the old growth forest to protect it.
I don't know, like, what the policy entails. Like, how do they ensure the, I mean, they do map it out, like delineate and put it on their ArcGIS map, for example. Like, we would know, like, this area is old growth forest, and you could physically look at them and tell. But I'm not sure if they physically put any boundary around that forest. I don't think they do that.
Councillor Haysom, do you have a comment regarding that? No, I'm just wondering if you have a comment regarding what has been talked about. Okay.
So if the mayor's finished?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So I guess we could look at this as saying, you know, first of all, there's such a small amount of old growth forest left in this province that I think it is imperative to protect it as much as possible. And if we haven't identified it, we should be doing so because it is vital. But if we have a deep concern about the fate of mill operators and that industry, I guess the other thing to consider is by identifying that old growth forest, we're ensuring that no one's breaking any laws. So that would be a benefit, I would think.
The mayor, your hand is still up. Do you have further thoughts? No. Do we have any
I just need to put my hand down.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Are we ready for the question? Question's been called for. All those in favor of this motion? Mayor?
I'm in favor.
And those that are not. Councillor Moore is not, and the motion has been approved. We're going to move on down to 10.2 finance regarding the hydrant charge policy, and I believe Elena is going to be leading us in that.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So perhaps Council will recall that in February of 2023, we were working on our budgets at the time and looking at the hydrant charges, and we had some background on how that charge rate was calculated, and it was applicable in the Pine Grove and McCullough Road areas where those fire hydrants are located. So we were directed to come up with a policy based on the existing practice of billing only those properties located within 1,000 feet of a hydrant. So what this policy does is clarifies the charge area and how the charge is calculated and what properties are billed. There's really no budget implications because it's consistent to how we've been doing it in practice. And the committee has the alternative. They can accept the policy as submitted or make changes as it deems necessary. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Elena regarding this? No. Councillor Staton, would you be willing to bring forth that motion, please?
To the chair and members of the Policy and Strategy Committee, I move that the Policy and Strategy Committee recommend that Municipal Council accept Policy 096 hydrant charge as presented and hereby give 7 days' notice of Council's intention to adopt the proposed policy at November 28th Council meeting.
Is there a seconder? Councillor Haysom? Any questions on the motion? Questions called for. All those in favor? Mayor?
Yes.
Okay. Motion has been approved. Okay. We're going to move on to Mayor, Deputy Mayor, Council matters. We still have a little bit of time left before our presenters. And I want to turn the time over to Councillor Greek regarding something that she would like to be brought forward.
Thank you, Chair. So this came to me from a resident who has been training with lumber sports and axe throwing, and they earned their position to compete in the World Axe Throwing Championship and looking for funding, and I pointed them toward the elite athlete grant that MODL has, and it came back as they can't fit under the current criteria of the grant because it's not recognized in Nova Scotia as an sport. I think I have that right there, Trudy. I'm sorry. It doesn't fit under the current criteria. So I would like if we could re-look into this policy to expand the criteria and sports that aren't recognized in the international sport world to also fall under this grant. I kind of butchered that a lot, didn't I?
Trudy, do you want to kind of explain maybe what the grant is as it stands and a little bit more on what Councillor Greek is trying to help us understand?
So Councillor Greek is absolutely correct that axe throwing does not have a national sporting association or a provincial association. And in our policy, it states that an elite athlete is defined as a person who commits significant time to training and competing in their sport. It's either an individual or a team member is recognized, and this is the key point, and is recognized by their national sporting association as a representative of Nova Scotia, Atlantic Canada, or Canada, eligible to compete at the highest level, nationally or internationally. So currently our criteria is that they have to be recognized by their national sporting association, and axe throwing does not currently have a national sporting association. I knew this was coming forth on the agenda, so we did take a look at a neighboring municipality that has a similar policy, but specifically for youth and persons with disabilities. And their policy says that the recipient must have won their way or have been selected to attend a recognized, sanctioned provincial, national, international level event, which includes the Maritimes, Atlantic, and East Coast events. The applicant must be a nonprofit volunteer organization that acts as a sponsor, or where the recipient is the recipient shall be registered with an organized community group, recreational, or sporting association. So if council is looking at suggesting a change for the elite athlete, and talking with Tissy, who administers this particular grant, our recommendation would be that they need to be registered with an organized community group, recreational, or sporting association, because I think recreational would, take out that it needs to be with a national sporting association. Now, the other flip side, because I always feel I need to give the pros and cons to, before council makes a decision. The reason why we had recommended the National Sporting Association or Provincial Association is that being a member of the Provincial National Association requires an athlete to follow safe sport practices. They usually have a code of conduct and overall a sense of belonging representation to that group. So that was part of our rationale when we brought forth that criteria. They won't approve them. The other thing in our elite athlete, if they've done anything from a misconduct perspective, the national or provincial association would notify us of that and let us know so that we wouldn't move them forward. So we don't want to make sure we want to ensure that we're not funding somebody that perhaps doesn't have the most stellar reputation in the sport. So that's the flip side and the rationale as to why, because it would go through a program if you're associated with a provincial organization and then a national, international. They usually have their own code of conducts and their own progression. When you're not associated with a national sporting event association, it really leaves it open for the rules and regulations. Now, in saying that, I know that axe throwing is a national world event. It was hosted in Barrington last year. So it's, right on the South Shore, so it is growing. I didn't get word, but I don't think pickleball also is not a national sporting. I don't want to say that for sure, but, we could have other sports that's growing fast in our communities that it does not have that national or provincial association attached to it. So I just want to give you all the information. We are planning on bringing the grant policy to council in December. because council had given us permission to look at an adult subsidy program. So we have some suggestions of where ProKids and that adult subsidy program should fall, and a couple of other minor changes to the grant policy. So if there's any kind of direction today, I just want to let council know that we're bringing forth changes to the policy, recommendations to the policy in December. Are there any questions? I know that was long-winded.
Yeah, we do have some questions. The mayor?
Thank you. I guess I'm looking at this. I recall when this was put in place because we didn't have a policy at that time. And it was put in place for individuals in our area that actually had earned their way to the Olympics. And I believe it was Alex Duxworth, Jenna Martin, and Krista Stockman at that time that have used this grant. I don't know how many other people were eligible for this, but it was definitely an elite status that they were competing in. With the neighboring municipality that you spoke of, you mentioned Atlantic, provincial, and national. We wouldn't be looking at going to the provincial and the maritime level with this, would we? Because I guess I can think of so many examples of individuals that represent us at that level. And I don't think, well, to me, I'm not sure it meets the definition of elite athlete if we were to take it down to that provincial Atlantic level. These truly were international events that these individuals were competing at. And I guess if we're doing a review of our policies, I guess, or the grant policy, if there's something that needs to come back from that, I really would like to hear more pros, cons in this, because I can think of examples, I guess, outside of, if we eliminate the ability for them to belong to a provincial or a provincial national body. I'm looking at hockey, for example. If there is an organization in place such as Minor Hockey, Hockey Canada, we would still use that, I would hope, because there would be so many individuals that compete at a maritime or even, we can say international, because they do go to Boston every summer, a lot of these athletes, to compete in hockey. Do I think they're all Olympians? No, or the highest level, but they do compete internationally. So I know that was the vetting ground, basically, to see who was actually at that level. So I'm not sure how we would do that. So I'll leave that to staff.
Currently, it does say it helped with travel costs competing at national or international, recognizing that national could happen in Nova Scotia. And I think the reason why our neighboring municipality says associated with a community group, recreational or sporting association, is you have a number of for-profit organizations. I'll use hockey as an example. You have a lot of hockey schools, and they might go to national and international, but it is not really with the sporting body or with a nonprofit. It is really commercial driven, I guess. So there's pros and cons to everything, and that's the reason why, and the mayor is quite correct. I was here when this was originally crafted as a policy, and it was around the Olympians that we didn't have a policy at the time, and it was really going to that very elite level. And we have changed it to say national and international. We did make that change the last time, recognizing that people have a course, you know, a progression, a path to get to the Olympics. It just doesn't happen overnight.
Thank you very much. Councillor Bell, you had a question?
Thank you. Having Councillor Greek bring this forward, I think, gives us the opportunity to have this discussion. And if there's an area that we may have left out, I'm quite open to having staff review and come back with recommendations on this, because there may be other areas that we missed. I understand that not everyone can throw an axe with precision. It is a sport discipline in some areas. I do understand that some local bars do it. That's a different level of axe throwing, I think. But I use the example of log throwing is not a recognized sport. However, in Nova Scotia with Scottish roots, and you look at the Highland Games, there are some individuals there that can throw a log a long ways. And some of those people who participated in the Highland Games have come from MODL in the past. And if someone like that had the opportunity to go to Glasgow, Scotland to compete currently, we would probably say no. I, too, look at the level of competition. Elite to me means going to a national or international level to compete. However, regional or provincial is not necessarily elite. You may be on your way there, but I would like to certainly specify those two as being separate. The other thing is, if we open this up for discussion and look at it, take, for instance, the firefighters' curling bonds field. That is a competition that is not open to everybody. It's only open to firefighters. You may be elite in that class, but there may be people twice as good as you in the general public. So we have to look out that we don't make silos within this policy. You try to keep it as open as possible and be able to discuss certain athletes that may not fit in a category but may be spectacular, and they might be from MODL, and we might want to sponsor them. So I just say this. Thank you to Councillor Greek for bringing this forward, because it does give us the opportunity to look where we may have loopholes. Thank you.
Councillor Hazel.
Thank you. I'm not a particularly sporty person myself, but one of the things that I've always appreciated about the recreation department here, and something that has been pushed by MODL and I think wider recreation throughout Nova Scotia, is the idea of inclusivity and recognizing that sometimes sport and recreation doesn't fall under the traditional ideas of soccer, hockey, what have you. And I think that if there is an opportunity for us to recognize that sport, recreation, and high performance can happen in a variety of different ways, and we can support people who are excelling at what they do, I think that that's a positive thing, so I would be in support of reviewing this policy to see how it can be more inclusive.
Councillor Moore, I believe you also have a question or a comment.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. Through you to Michelle, when is this competition, where and when is this competition? You might have said, but I didn't hear you, or I wasn't listening. When and where is this competition being taking place? Okay. While you're looking, I'm also going to ask another question, if I may, just directly to Elena, through you.
Certainly.
I mean Trudy. It's the hair. It's the you both got the same hairdo. This grant, this elite grant that we have, trying to get my words out today. I'm worse than Wendy. Do we use it all during the budget year?
Actually, we have used most of it, or if not all of it, already, because we've had an increase in the number of folks since we changed the policy. Mm-hmm. Now, going back in the original days, we used to budget $10,000 in the elite athlete, mm-hmm. and it wasn't being used. Right. And then we recently changed some of the criteria around that, and we only have $4,000 And I can tell you that it's been, I'm positive it's been used already, and we're not to the end of March. So
right.
When I come forth with my operating budget, mm-hmm. I suspect I'd be looking for a slight increase in that particular area
so
because
saying,
it's getting used more.
All right. So I'm just wondering if we do have, it really doesn't probably matter what the date is.
While Councillor Greek is looking that up, I just want to know, is this policy only for athletes within Modal, or does it include any athlete in Nova Scotia since they since originally it was to represent Nova Scotia?
Thank you for asking that question, because that jogs my memory around something else I wanted to mention. Currently, the policy says the athletes in Lunenburg County. So one of the ways that you could narrow the scope around the elite athlete is to say specifically the municipality of the district of Lunenburg, which is typical of other municipal units that only support athletes that's from their own particular municipality.
Councillor Greek, do you have the answer to Councillor Moore's question?
Yes, I have the question to answer to the question. Next August in London.
London, England, or London, Ontario?
London, England.
Okay, thank you. Are there any further questions before we ask Councillor Greek to bring forth the motion? No further questions. Councillor Greek, would you be willing to bring forth that motion?
I would love to. Thank you. To the Chair and members of the Policy and Strategy Committee, I move that the Policy and Strategy Committee direct staff to review Policy 043 Community Grants Program / Sponsorship Request Schedule F Elite Athlete Travel and report back to the committee on options for inclusion of athletes who travel to national or international events but are not a member of National Sporting Association. I so move.
We have a seconder. Seconded by Councillor Vino. Any questions on the motion? Questions called for. All those in favor, please signify. Thank you very much, and that motion has been approved.
You didn't ask her.
Oh, I did ask her, and she put her hand up.
Opposed.
Oh, well, everybody put their hand up, so there couldn't be anybody opposed.
Okay. Yes.
No. You should ask for opposed.
Oh, I should still ask anyway?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Does anybody oppose? Oh, I am sorry. Thank you. I'm sorry.
So that's all you needed.
No.
Right. And it has been opposed by Councillor Staton. So we're going to move on to another councillor's matters, and that is Councillor DeLong. Would you like to give us a little bit more information and your thoughts regarding the request to pursue videoing of council and the committee meetings?
Certainly. Thank you, Chair. So my thoughts on this, most other municipalities of comparable size and resource level in Nova Scotia have video of their council and committee meetings of council available to the public online. Our beautiful new building here has fantastic audio-visual capabilities, and I feel like we aren't making full use of them. As a municipal government, we are the most transparent and accessible level of government to the public. Staff has said, though, that there are challenges to making our videos available online, such as data storage. I'd like to hear more about those challenges so that Council can make the decision about whether they're worth overcoming in order to make videos available online. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe that Alex Demerick is going to give us a little bit more information regarding this idea as well.
Yes, good morning, committee members. So as Councillor DeLong has pointed out, we do have AV capabilities in the current council chambers. Our combination of agenda packages and audio recordings being available after council meetings generally provide similar access to the public in terms of the content of council's debates. The area where staff feel we could be offering some improvement is in the area of live streaming. So if council's interested in exploring whether or not to switch to video recording rather than audio recording, we would suggest that you should also be exploring whether or not you switch to providing a live stream so that residents could tune in rather than having to physically come if they wanted to witness council's discussion. We do have some reliability issues. We have the capability to provide live streaming and video transcripts if that's what council likes. Currently, we're not comfortable with the reliability of the link to live streaming. So we're able to do it, but it requires constant monitoring and the system is not well set up to ensure that regular staff that do these functions like recording secretaries can make it work and have confidence that there won't be issues with providing the live streaming. We certainly don't want to get in a situation where we communicate to the public that they can attend meetings online and then not have that capability consistently available for them. So there will likely be costs associated with either of those options, but it's certainly not insurmountable. This is something that staff would normally pursue on our own for this sort of level of budget, but where it pertains specifically to the proceedings of council, we've been deferring and waiting for council to make some kind of indication one way or the other. So your current policy requires the audio recordings to be available. You could make a revision to that process, and we could either provide live streaming or video transcripts.
Thank you very much. I know that when we were first came together as a council, that we did discuss a few times that we were interested in having videoing done and put on, whether it was live stream on Facebook or on videotaped and then put on to YouTube. Do we have any other questions or thoughts? Mayor Bolivar-Genson.
I guess my only comment would be is that we have tried Facebook Live on different occasions. It's a long way from perfect. We have a lot of work to do before we go full-blown live streaming. And I guess I would like to see what that looks like and the costs associated back to budget, whatever, because it doesn't appear that we have those capabilities. I know, Councillor DeLong, you said that, or I understood that we had those in your opening remarks, but that ability to do that doesn't exist with our current system, is what I've been told through PAC meetings and so on. So I guess I've watched some of the Facebook Live streams that we have put out, and again, they're far from perfect when you're trying to participate via Facebook.
Councillor DeLong, you have a comment.
Yeah, my comment is just about the nature of the request, I suppose. I don't know that live streaming is something that we're interested in currently. I just think that we should be having a video record of the proceedings of council online after the fact. If we want to look at live streaming at some point, then definitely, but I think it would be, you know, it would be at the wish of council.
Councillor Hubley?
I just want to, the motion here says to investigate. It doesn't say to go forward with it. And I think maybe investigating it is not a bad idea, because when we do go live with Facebook, I get nothing complaints from the residents about not being able to hear, their comments not posting. So maybe an investigation would help the whole way around.
I also want to point out regarding the motion is that it's on video transcripts rather than live. The motion doesn't say anything about live. Alex, you have a comment?
Yeah, or maybe just an apology to Councillor DeLong. I should have prefaced my comments. The request is specifically around video transcripts. That's a relatively simple switch to make. The agenda packages, including any PowerPoints, that are presented and the audio transcripts are currently available. So staff don't feel there's a significant difference between the request to have video transcripts versus audio transcripts. If there is direction from the committee to explore switching to video transcripts, we would ask that your direction also include exploring live streaming, because that does represent a difference in terms of the accessibility that you're providing to the public. And it'd be best for council to have that information so that you could make the choice whether to stay where you currently are, switch to video transcripts, or switch to video transcripts as well as live streaming.
Councillor Statton, you have a comment or question?
I have a comment, and I'm just wondering, doing this, will we restrict councillors in their comments, and will they be a little more careful in maybe making comments about some of the changes we want to make? I'm just concerned with that aspect of it. I'm pretty straightforward. I'll tell you what's on my mind, but I'm just wondering if that will restrict some of the comments because you know you're going live on Facebook or YouTube or whatever we choose. I'd also like to see this, because there's a cost involved, there's always a cost involved, refer to whatever staff comes up with for recommendations to be referred to the next budget considerations.
Thank you very much. Are there any other comments? Do we want to add to make video transcripts and live streaming? What was live streaming from council and committees of council available to the public online? Do we want to add that in there?
Yes.
Yes. Councillor DeLong, can you add that? Okay, so remember that this is just to direct staff to give us information. Okay. Would you be willing to put forth that motion?
Thank you. Yes, Chair. To the Chair and members of the Policy Strategy Committee, I move that Policy and Strategy Committee direct staff to investigate and report back to committee on the measures needed to make video transcripts and live streaming available from Council and committees of Council to the public online, and further include the benefits and challenges of a system. I so move.
Do we have a seconder? Seconded by Councillor Haysom. Are there any questions on the motion? Question called for. All those in favor? Mayor Bolivar-Getson?
Yes.
Thank you. And motion has been approved. What's our time? Okay, we have enough time. So we
take a quick break.
We're going to do the last 11.3, which is also all by Councillor DeLong, and then we'll take a break because we'll have to change over between Councillor Moore and myself before our guests do their presentation. Yeah. Right, yes, yeah. Yeah. So Councillor DeLong?
Certainly, but it is 10 past 10. Do we have enough time to debate this and have a break before the presentation begins?
I think so.
Okay, certainly. So the next item I'm requesting is a declaration from the mayor on the epidemic of gender-based violence and our support of declaring that to be an epidemic.
Are there any questions regarding that idea? Councillor Bell.
Thank you. Should this declaration be forwarded to the Police Advisory Committee to hear what our policing professionals have to say on this matter? I consider available housing to be a serious fact. I do hear that violence does affect households. We do have hate on visible minorities on the increase, or the concern of our government and law enforcement. However, before I vote on supporting GBV, I would like to hear from our own RCMP force. Through our monthly and quarterly reports, presented to us by the local RCMP. It doesn't necessarily support this as an epidemic. I recently attended the annual Nova Scotia Police Governance Conference in Nova Scotia here, where different trends were presented to us. A series of trends were identified to us, but there was no mention of gender-based violence. And my question would be, why would they have left it out when they were looking at the different trends that are affecting Nova Scotians? So it's more of a question than anything.
Thank you very much. Mayor Bolivar-Getson, you have a comment?
Yes, I'm just looking to see how this differs than the proclamation that I read every December 5th in relation to National Day of Remembrance on Action on Violence Against Women. And that dates back to probably 30 years ago with the incident that happened at Ecole Polytechnique in Montreal. And we do recognize that day every year, and we do give quite a few of the stats and so on violence against women at that time. So could that be all rolled into the National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women?
So DeLong, you have a comment regarding what Mayor Bolivar-Getson mentioned?
Yes, thank you. When I spoke with our deputy CAO about this motion, I asked if it would be better sent to the Police Advisory Board, and I believe that I'm going to let Alex speak to this himself, but I believe that he said that it should be a decision of council whether or not council wants to declare this. As to the mayor's comment, yes, I think that it could be rolled up into that statement. I think that that's the most appropriate place. Thank you.
Are there any other comments? Councillor Haysom.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I don't believe that we need to defer to anyone to condemn gender-based violence. And I do know that we recognize violence against women. December 6th, 30 years later, still the problem increasing. And perhaps the reason it isn't mentioned by some of the different police associations is because it's often not reported to the police. So I think if we want to make a strong statement, that we should feel confident to make that decision ourselves without deferring.
Alex, you have a comment to make?
Yes, just to, I guess, provide some clarification. When we reviewed this, certainly council has the ability to make those types of proclamations. And as the mayor has pointed out, you've annually made a proclamation with respect to violence against women. So when we reviewed the proposal for the agenda item, it seemed like an appropriate route for us to revise some of the material that would go in the normal proclamation in early December to include some of the language that had been provided from the Be the Peace Institute via Councillor DeLong. To Councillor Bell's point, could certainly have an additional motion requesting that Police Advisory Board have a discussion with the RCMP on statistics related to gender-based violence in the municipality and how it affects policing and if they have any other insights to provide. So it certainly seems like a yes and situation rather than a either or.
We'll take another question, and if we wish to have further discussion, because this has gone longer than I anticipated that it would, because I thought this wasn't, anyway, it doesn't matter what I thought. We'll have Councillor Lee's thoughts, and then we're going to have to stop and take a break in order to have our presenters to be able to meet on their time schedule as well.
I just want to share something that I Googled through this because I wanted to make sure that it was an epidemic, and because I feel it also is. But it says the final report from the Inquirer examining the 2020 mass shootings in Nova Scotia calls for sweeping change to end gender-based violence. It describes it as an epidemic that, like the COVID-19 pandemic, warrants a meaningful whole-of-society response. I support this 100%.
Thank you very much.
So are there any more discussions, or do we want to move on to the motion, or just take a break?
I guess I'm ready to move on, if I could. Just making sure that the motion reflects that it be part of the overall National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women. And I did say December 5th, and it is December 6th.
Okay, we'll make that change right now. Are you doing that, April? No, if you could just pass it down to Councilor DeLorme.
To the Chair and committee members of the Policy and Strategy Committee, I move that Policy and Strategy Committee recommend to Council that the proclamation prepared for December 6th for the Mayor, stating Council's support for in declaring gender-based violence to be an epidemic, be included. I so move.
Is there a seconder? Seconded by Councillor Haysom. Is there a question on the motion?
Question.
Question's been called for. All those in favor? Mayor Bolivar-Getson?
Yes.
Thank you very much. The motion has been approved. We're going to take a 5-minute break in order to change over, as I have a meeting I need to go to on behalf of the mayor and our municipality.